third class. I mean, the whole sequence is about 12 modules, Linda? Is that how many modules there are?
It's really 13, and then there's a 14th that you do on your own. That's the big one, the integrative practices.
Yeah. So we're kind of in the middle of all those modules. And, you know, you can come in anywhere. This module happens to be on death and dying. So that's why, you know, I just wanted to let you know that what the topic is. And there's a whole kind of meditation that we do that I'm talking about tonight, especially about the stages of the dissolution of the body and the stages. So later, let me know. I don't want it to be overwhelming to anybody, but certainly somebody who's just checking out DV for the first time.
Thank you. I've read quite a few books, you know, by the Dalai Lama and Pema Chodron.
Oh, great.
So, I love her, so I've read some stuff, you know, and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and
Great. Well, feel free to let me know afterwards, or let me know if you have any questions or anything.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We're going to give folks another minute or two to join, and then we'll get started momentarily.
And Rosemary, the book we've been reading or using for this is His Holiness's book called Advice on Dying and Living a Better Life.
Okay.
I think I probably ask this every single class. Is that the same title? Some people have found it under a different cover. Is that the same title on the other books that people have found?
Yeah, I have this one.
Advice on Living and Dying. Hey, how come yours is... Mine is like backwards, like a mirror, right? And yours isn't.
Oh, yours looks fine to me. It's just the way you have your Zoom settings.
Okay. All right.
No, it looks perfectly good to me.
Well, good. Okay. Yet another thing I need to learn about Zoom. At least I'm not with a cat filter. I don't have a cat filter on.
I think I might need a cat filter.
Okay, I'm showing us at 7:01. So I'm going to just make just a couple of announcements real quick, see if that's okay. So I just wanted to remind everyone that there are so many things happening at the Kanapa Center. It's amazing. So my favorite place to go, as many of you have heard me say, is kanapa-center.org. And then from there, go in that upper right corner and click on the calendar. And there are so many things. There's everything from weekday morning meditations to Tara practices. This Thursday, I just saw this. Actually, we have a special opportunity with a relatively new nun, Venerable Choying, and that's otherwise known as Sarah Brooks. And she's a longtime member of Kanapa Center and is now an ordained nun. And she's doing creative mindfulness this Thursday. And there's just so much happening. And, of course, Venerable Rabina is here this Wednesday and next Wednesday. So if you have not tuned into Venerable Rabina, do so. She's amazing and you won't regret it. It's a fantastic opportunity. So definitely check out what's happening, virtually, as well as there are some things happening in person. Most things are virtual, though. Okay, so without further ado, then, I will go ahead and turn it over to Steve.
Okay, thank you. And hello, everybody. Welcome back. To start, I just want everybody to kind of refresh their own mind on how to set your intention. And last week I brought up a couple of analogies that could help you kind of amp up your intention before we do the four measurables. So one way is to kind of check for yourself, is this realm that we're living in, you know, perfect? Is this free of suffering? Are you free of suffering? How can you remind yourself that actually we're in a samsaric cycle of kind of like a prison? And Rosemary, we talked last week about how, you know, it's such a gorgeous world. We're not trying to deny its beauty and not trying to not partake of that beauty. But if we look carefully, we can see that, oh yeah, this is this isn't so swell. And what, so for yourself, think in your own life, like what kind of suffering would you personally like to be free of? What kind of suffering do you see coming back over and over in your life? And, you know, ensnaring you and chaining you. Where's the evidence for yourself? So first you have to make the case for yourself that this is something that you want to be free of, this endless cycle. There's so many benefits being human. We're not just counting those. We're wanting to know how can we use this human life to help liberate ourselves and others from this prison. So first, do a little reflection to remind yourself, what is it that you are imprisoned by? What would you like to be free of? And then extend it out to others. What kind of suffering have you been watching on the news these days that you would like others to be free of? You know, bringing to mind an awareness that these problems are caused by our negative actions of body, speech, and mind, our ignorance, our anger, our craving. And so making this wish, this intention before we start a practice, before we start our day, you know, setting our intention, this is why I'm doing this, to be able to have the skills to get out of this prison and to hold the door open for everyone else. And so then if you're a Buddhist, you would take refuge with this kind of strong intention in the path out of this prison, the path that the Buddha has shown. You don't have to do that. If you're in another religion or another thing that you take refuge in, then this is the time to take refuge in what will help you get out of this prison. And then I'm going to ask Linda to read the Four Immeasurables, which will help kind of, she's going to pause after each stanza so that we can think about it for a little bit and try to attune to that that stanza.
Okay. So as Steve said, I will pause after each one and just take a moment to kind of reflect on that and really feel it in your heart. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies.
Thank you, Linda. So we're going to start by just doing a brief meditation. So where you are now, try to make sure that you're sitting in a position with your back as straight as possible, not rigid so that your muscles are tight, but balanced. You can use a cushion to kind of sit so that your hips are a little bit higher than your knees, which will help you balance your vertebrae one on top of the other. Now bring all your awareness to your breath. And with each inhale and exhale, you can count as one. So inhale one, exhale one. And then increase the count up to 5 or 10, using this as a way to bring your mind back to something as simple as the breath that you carry with you always in this life. Each exhale, releasing the stress or worries or heat or discomfort from the day. and inhaling freshness, clarity. And just like your breath rises and falls, see if you can mindfully watch your own thoughts. And as they start to rise, you put your attention on that rising, they'll often subside. Just like a wave. Instead of following the thought, try to create a little space so that you can feel the energy of that thought rising up and then settling back as you notice it, as you witness it. And then another thought will rise up, and the object is to see if you can create some space between those waves of thoughts. And witness those waves and rest in the space between those thoughts. Slowly open your eyes, come back to the group. So I just want to check in with people and see how things are sitting with you from, I guess, the last couple of classes and from reading the book. Anything that you want to bring up before we press forward?
If so, feel free to unmute yourself and share your thoughts. And if you are streaming on YouTube, feel free to leave questions and comments in the chat. I'm monitoring that as well.
And speaking of chat, we have a new person on Zoom, Rosemarie. Welcome. And so I thought it might be helpful for her and for us if you put in chat, like we've been, you know, traditional meditation in Buddhism is to always start by thinking about the advantages of whatever you're about to do, whatever meditation you're doing or practice you're doing, and the disadvantages of not doing it. And so we've been talking, and the poem that we've been using in the book has been going over some of the advantages of recollecting death, meditating on death, studying death and rebirth. And why don't you just throw out in chat some reasons why you or we are studying this topic. You know, what are the advantages for you personally or as a class, traditionally, some of the benefits of studying this topic? So we just throw out anything that comes to mind. And Rosemarie, you can chime in, but you could also just sit and read. These are great. This probably isn't a traditional answer, but something that I like to do is think of death as my advisor. So it helps helps me in making decisions to remember my death. And it's something that we all have in common. You know, all living creatures have in common. So one thing we all have in common helps connect us. So definitely this practice, especially the one we're going to do tonight, is so that we can become familiar with the actual stages of dying. So, you know, we can familiarize ourselves with the impermanence of life, and we can practice a lot. We've been talking about using everyday things to help us practice with our attitude towards change, right? Our attitude towards big changes in our life, shifting things, because we don't want to deny our feelings about them. Feelings are really important, but we want to use those feelings to help us find the right thing to bring in, and to make sure that while we can be sorry we're leaving or sad we're leaving or miss people, to have super strong feelings about it, super strong clinging and grasping is going to become super problematic for us, especially at the time of death. It's like holding on to the train station platform as the train is pulling away. That's a problem. Saying goodbye and missing people and telling them you love them, that's not a problem. And I think one of the things for me personally that has helped in understanding kind of the balance of how to use feelings in some of this practice is to remember the image that's used so often in Buddhism of the lotus. So in every tanka or every painting you see in Tibetan Buddhism of the Buddha, you see the Buddha sitting on a lotus and then on a moon and sun disc. Well, the lotus represents renunciation. And as I said in the first class, you know, renunciation doesn't mean going away from the world. It means knowing that the world goes away. So when you know and remember that the world goes away, that this person you're calling yourself changes and goes away, then you hold to things in a very different manner. So what I wanted to say about the lotus was it's coming out of the mud. It's growing out of shit, you know. And so to just deny that part of the process, I can certainly say I was guilty of that. Like, I would like to just forget all the crap that has happened in my life and just go on up to something else. And that's a problem. It's called spiritual bypass. Instead, use the crap in your life as fertilizer, as motivational energy. I think Lama Yeshe had said that some of his favorite students were the ones who had really difficult, problematic lives, because then their path to enlightenment was juicier and richer. So we all have our own history on the path, and the point is to use it, not to deny it. So that's just my little pitch for how to bring feelings into the practice instead of avoiding them. Because death is certainly going to bring up a whole bunch of feelings. We're not trying to escape them. And as we work through them, then one of the things that will help lessen our own anxiety about what's going to happen at the moment of death is the death dissolution meditation, which we're going to go over in a minute. I think today we're going to do the four main stages. And then the last stages, which we'll do next week, have much more to do with emptiness. Because as all of the elements and the sense organs dissolve, there's access to a different kind of consciousness that we're not in touch with in our 24/7 life cycle. So understanding and having an awareness of emptiness and how to meditate on emptiness is going to be crucial at those last stages of death. And if you've been reading the book, then that will make a lot more sense, how you're trying to join your understanding of emptiness with the clear light that you will have access to at the moment of death, at a certain point of death. The more practice you've done on emptiness, the more meditations you've done and trying to understand and incorporate and get glimpses of it, the more you'll be able to use that moment when the clear light presents itself to join with it. And that's the real gift in understanding the stages of dying. That's what we want to be able to do. So you've probably heard stories of monks and high teachers and nuns who have, their body has not deteriorated after death. They've stayed in this kind of state where medically they're dead, but their body is not decomposing. So does that sound familiar to people? Okay, so that's because they're doing what I'm talking about, where they have merged with that clear light of death. And all of us will have that moment when we'll get that glimpse, but how we're able to recognize it and join it and use it is going to vary depending on our abilities. So that's another real reason why we're doing this practice. So any questions before I kind of go on?
There is one question in chat. And Julie, you may need to clarify. Julie asks, are these the signs that hospice and doctors use? I'm not sure if you're asking if these stages of the dying process or something else.
I guess more or less the outward stages, like the listlessness and... I guess the drop coming out of the nose.
So we'll go over it. We're going to jump right into that because, yes, some of these stages are familiar, especially the early stages that are more outward, the hospice definitely is looking at. And I'll just talk about one of them right now because in the very first stage, hospice calls it restless legs. And I think that's what they're calling it. And I mean, I've witnessed it with animals and with people where the person's constantly trying to get up. And it's one of the first signs, because what you'll feel, you'll feel that your arms and legs are falling. And so in all these different, so that becomes very disconcerting to some people. And so it's why drugs are often used, because it's seen that the person is in distress. And they might be, they might be, but the drugs kind of sedate them. So I definitely saw that with my mother and in hospice care. So everyone's going to have, it's very much of a dreamlike state. So for example, when you're sleeping in an overly cold room, you might start dreaming that you're in snow. You might dream you're in snow. I might dream that, I don't know, I'm on stage and it's freezing. I don't have any clothes on. Somebody else might dream that they got thrown into the middle of the ocean. And, you know, everybody's going to have a different dream. Somebody else might dream it's Christmas and they're really happy because it's cold outside. That's what you bring to the experience. But the experience of the stages is what we're going to go over. The point is to keep practicing in our daily life with kind of recognizing that, oh, this is a dream. The way I see this experience is based on my mind. And so that when we're going through these stages, we'll be calmer. And when we're having those feelings of our arms and legs falling, we will not, even if we do start seeing it as kind of a frightening experience, we'll be able to detach from it a little bit and witness it, just like we were doing in that meditation, where we were trying to move a little bit away and not follow all of our thoughts. We were trying to watch them as kind of like the ocean going up and down, and get a little distance so that you're like you're watching it on a movie. That's something we can practice throughout our day, so that then when we are in an experience where our arms and legs feel like they're falling, if a kind of a nightmare scenario attaches itself to it, it won't frighten us. Or we'll have so much experience with it, there won't be a nightmare experience. There doesn't have to be. But in either way, we'll recognize that, oh, these are just illusions, delusions. Any other questions? All right, so...
Danny.
No, Linda?
I don't see any.
Okay. So I want to, I'm kind of debating whether to go back to the poem. I think since we're talking about the stages, I'm going to read to you some of the stages now, and we're going to do a meditation on it later. And then we can go back to the poem. The poem is just, is a way to kind of break the meditation into parts. And what we've done in the poem so far is, you know, start with why we're meditating on death, the importance of remembering the practices of death, because nothing else can really help you at the moment of death except your practice. So that's what we've been doing up till now. Okay. Anybody have any questions? I know this is kind of a lot. Okay. You see my writing? Yes? Okay. All right. These are, sorry about making you dizzy. All right. So this is called the death dissolution meditation. And the first dissolution, there's lots of different ways to think about all of this. So I just put some things up there on the page. So the first dissolution is the form aggregate. So remember what we've been talking about is we are a collection of aggregates, more than just hair and nose and eyes. We have all kinds of things that make us something that we can have the label Rosemary stick to, or the label Linda stick to. You have to have a collection of things that is the life support that contains you. So the death dissolution process means that the elements and the aggregates start to dissolve into each other. They start to kind of melt into each other. And the more we become familiar with those, then the less frightening they'll be. Somebody else asked me once, I mean, because I remember when my mom was dying the first time, everybody thought she was going to die in a week, and then it was a month, and then it was 13 months. So she hadn't really entered these stages. From what Geshe-la has told me is once you're in these active stages of dying, there's no turning around. So I don't know what that, so I guess like when somebody, you know, is brought back to life, they might not necessarily have gone through all of these, I don't know, I can ask him that question when I see him. And also, just before we go any further, they can happen very quickly. You know, like if I get hit by a car and die, these will happen so in such a blur. If my mother, she was in the active stages of dying for 4 days, and I saw these kind of happen very slowly. So the form aggregate is dissolving, and the eye sense is what is, and I'm going to tell you about that in a minute. The eye sense is the thing that's going to be the most focus here. The earth element in our body can no longer support us. So what that means is, the way I've memorized it is, and it doesn't have to be in this exact sequence, but my arms, my body becomes weak and thin. So the body itself, the structure of it, the foundation of it, the skeleton is unable to really hold us. It becomes weak. My arms and legs feel like they're falling. So Geshe-la says some people feel like they're being trapped underneath something, so they're constantly trying to get up. Other people feel like, you know, that falling that you feel right before you fall asleep sometimes? Sometimes people feel that. My arms and legs feel like they're falling. And you know, you'll get all of this, so you don't have to worry about writing it down. My body becomes thin and weak. My arms and legs feel like they're falling. My vision becomes dark and blurry. So this is the eye sense, right? Your vision becomes dark and blurry. You can no longer blink your eye. Your natural glow is gone. And then the inner sign for the person experiencing the first dissolution is a mirage. So you see something kind of mirage-like. When you're doing the meditation, then you say, mirage is here, fireflies, smoke is coming. That's the second sign. So there's all these inner signs, there's these external signs. The inner sign is something only the person dying experiences. So then you've gone through the first step. The second dissolution is the feeling aggregate. So the form aggregate has already been dissolving into the feeling aggregate. Now it's going to focus on the hearing sense. And the water element can no longer support us. And the inner sign is going to be smoke. So during the second stage, it goes like this. I can no longer feel the difference between pain, pleasure, or neutrality. Neutrality means you're not in either the stage of pain or pleasure. You're just comfortable. So you're no longer feeling. This is the feeling aggregate. So that's kind of the good news. You're no longer feeling pain, pleasure, or neutrality. That's kind of gone from your experience. Your mouth and nose dry and pucker because the water element has dissolved. Okay, I can no longer feel the difference between pain, pleasure, neutrality. I can no longer remember the difference between pain, pleasure, neutrality. My mouth and nose dry and pucker. I can no longer hear external sounds. I can no longer hear internal sounds. I remember when Geshe-la was teaching this to me, I was like, what are internal sounds? You mean like my stomach? He said, no, like there's an internal like whirring. And so if you put your fingers in your ears, you kind of hear your own little like system vibrating. That sound is gone. And then the inner sign is smoke. It could be like a wisp of smoke or a fog or, you know, just some kind of like smoke-like appearance. So then you would say to yourself, in the meditation, you would say to yourself, mirage is gone, smoke is here, and fireflies are coming, because fireflies is the third sign. So in the third dissolution, it's the aggregate of perception or discrimination, where you can tell this from that, the sense of smell, and the fire element is now dissolving. So earth has dissolved into water element. Water is dissolved into fire element. Now fire element is dissolving. And so the way I learned it is now I can no longer remember the names of the people in my life. Now I can no longer remember my relationships to these people. And again, this is not with, well, so we're going to meditate on it as that's not a a terrible thing. It's just kind of, you know, a relaxing of things. No longer remember the names. I can no longer remember the relationships to these people. A warmth withdraws. Your inhale is short and your exhale is long. And you, if you've been, if you work with hospice or you have watched somebody die, you know that sign. And that again can be a second or it can be days. The inhale is short. The exhale is long. I can no longer smell. Your sense of smell is gone. Yeah, no longer smell. And the inner sign is fireflies. So then you would say, smoke is gone, fireflies is here, and light is coming. The fourth dissolution is the aggregate of compositional factors. That's everything else, all the other mental faculties besides the ones that we've already talked about, discrimination, feeling, form. This is now all the other mental factors are dissolving. The tongue sense, the sense of taste is dissolving. The air element can no longer support us. So all these elements have dissolved and into fire and then into air. And so the meditation goes like this. I can no longer move my body. I can no longer remember the mundane details of this life, like who, why, where. You still have thoughts, but you can't, you have no longer awareness of the mundane details of this life. You can no longer inhale. So it's just a long exhale. You can no longer move your body. You no longer have any conceptual thoughts at all. Your tongue is thick and dark, and you can no longer taste. And the inner sign is a flickering light, like a candle sputtering. Okay, so that's those are the four main obvious sign of dissolution. And then it goes into the next set, which are much more internal, because there's no longer sense faculties that are dissolving. It's now much more of an internal consciousness. So the gross forms of consciousness cease, and then there's a pure white sky-like appearance. And then this white sky dissolves into red sky-like appearance. And then like a sunset, like pure red, orange color. And then this dissolves into a dark sky and it feels like fainting because there's no, yeah, it's hard to, we've all done this, but it's hard to find the words. And so, but it's said to be like fainting because of consciousness kind of collapsing. And then the clear light of death appears. And that's the moment that you have this opportunity. And I'm going to read about it in case you don't have this book, to join what's called the mother and child clear light of emptiness. I hope I can find it quickly. Well, for most people, death occurs when the subtlest level of mind manifests. The most subtle consciousness usually remains, well, this is, it's hard to just jump in the middle of this book. give me one more second here. Okay, one of the last stanzas of the poem says, may the mother and child of clear light meet when near attainment dissolves into the all empty and all conceptual multiplications cease and experience like an autumn sky free from polluting conditions dawns. So we often talk in Buddhism how our true nature of mind is pure sky-like, right, with nothing interfering, and that everything else, you know, is the clouds and the weather. And if we're aware that we are way more than the clouds and the weather, that we, our true nature is sky-like, what this is saying is that at that eighth stage, dissolution stage, that's when we feel that completely clear sky-like nature of the mind. And the point is to be able to join and stay in that state of mind as long as possible. This will propel you to your next life. And ultimately, if we have a lot of practice at this, to not have to take another rebirth, and to be free of cyclic existence. So this is why, you know, practitioners look forward to this kind of practice, because of the promise of what can happen if we have really practiced this stage enough. There is no mind more subtle than the mind of clear light. It serves as the basis of all appearance of cyclic existence and nirvana. The mind of clear light has existed continuously since beginningless cyclic existence. Since it is not temporary, it's called fundamental mind. They're newly produced and fountain. This all-empty, fundamental, innate mind of clear light is the innermost mind. All other minds can be considered coarse, although there are many levels of coarseness. All right, so I'm not going to read all this to you, but it's here. So this is why meditating on emptiness is so critical to understanding Buddhism. We're going to talk about that in a minute, but first I want to just stop and see if you have any thoughts or questions about what I have up here on the board.
So again, if you do have any questions, just unmute and you can ask. If you're streaming, feel free to leave it in the chat.
I want to talk just a little bit about emptiness, because I feel like I'm throwing a lot of stuff out there at you. Understanding the Buddhist doctrine of emptiness is crucial to living and dying with realism and without fear. Remember, emptiness doesn't mean non-existence. It doesn't mean nothingness. It means that it's empty of the way that we see things is very fixed. So remember, I've been talking a lot about how our minds are like a river. And, you know, we can look and see just this one little slice of the river and think, that's us, that's it. If we were above the river, we would see this endless flow of river that we wouldn't really be able to find its source or its end. Also, when you're looking at the river, you know that Western philosopher who has said you can't put your foot in the same river twice. You're pretty much familiar with that. Has everybody heard that expression? No? Okay, I can't remember who said it, but it's a Western philosopher. What they're talking about emptiness. What does that mean, you're not putting your foot in the same river twice? I can always, I'm from New Orleans, I can always go home and find the Mississippi. I can always put my foot in the Mississippi. But, it's not the same river, because that water is constantly flowing. The other thing, that's emptiness. That's part of what we're talking about. You can find the river. You can label it. You can put it on a map. But it's really the collection of its parts that hold the label Mississippi River. If the river dried up and there's just the river bed, that's not really the label Mississippi River anymore. If the river bed somehow changed and the river just flooded everywhere, then that's also not the Mississippi River anymore. But all those parts are perfectly in place for us to be able to hold that, for it to be able to hold that label Mississippi River. And we're all able to go and look at it and agree that's the Mississippi River, because it's functioning like the Mississippi River. But it's not it's not permanent. It's not existing from its own side. all these things, ultimately, the whole point of understanding emptiness is to understand that everything is relative. Everything comes into existence based on causes and conditions. That's the most powerful part of all of this. This is why it's called dependent arising. It's not that it's empty and nothing. It's that it is based on causes and conditions. It arises dependently on other things, as do we. And so when meditating on emptiness, meditate on yourself as that river, that you are here based on causes and conditions. You have arisen dependent on other things, which is good news, which is really good news, because that means that your liberation from what we've been meditating on as this prison is also based on causes and conditions and arises based on what you put in that river. So the more we can meditate on that and get these little momentary glimpses, and maybe some of you have longer glimpses of what that means about emptiness. Just want to read one other thing. So he's kind of getting to what I just said. The closer you look, the more it is not found in any of these ways as being solid and coming from its own side. This is the case for all phenomena. The fact that you cannot find them under any such analysis means that they do not exist from their own power. They are not self-established. They are not inherently existent, despite all appearances to the contrary. Still, this does not mean that sentient beings and things do not exist. Rather, they do not exist the way they appear to, so concretely. When you analyze and meditate well, you will understand the harmony between the actual appearance of purpose and people and things and their emptiness of inherent existence. Without such understanding, emptiness and appearance seem to prohibit one another. All phenomena, causes and effects, agents and actions, good and bad, exist conventionally. They are dependent arisings. Because phenomena depend upon other factors for their existence, they are not independent. This basis of independence is their ultimate truth. This absence of independence is their ultimate truth. Comprehending this is wisdom. So the fundamental cause of suffering is the ignorance of this. So anyway, this is all like a jam-packed little nugget of information and like a pep talk into meditating on emptiness, because without an understanding of emptiness, why would we really be meditating on all this death stuff? It would just be, you know, but it's what is really seen in Buddhism is this incredible opportunity, just this incredible opportunity to launch us farther ahead. So let's
there's one question. Yeah. If you want to tackle that one real quick. Julie wants to know, the white noise that stops at death that Lama Yeshe mentioned in the Mahamudra, is that the same as the ringing in the ears we hear when meditating?
I think so. Who knows that stops at death? I would think so. But I'll double check with Geshe-la. But yeah, because like when you put your fingers in your ears and you hear all that, that sounds a lot like white noise. So yeah, and that would be, you know, in that, I think it was the second dissolution, no longer able to hear inner or outer sounds. And you know what, it gave me comfort to know that any discomfort somebody I'm helping, you know, go through the stages of death, that they don't feel pain after a certain point. So what I was trying to convince hospice of with my mother is that let's stop the morphine after a little bit, you know, after she stops having restless legs. You know, this is a hard call, and it's a very personal one. And if somebody's in a lot of pain, you know, you're not going to really be able to meditate on these death stages anyway. But But my mother had, you know, pretty severe dementia, so she wasn't going to be, you know, this wasn't going to be interfering with her process. But after she stopped having restless legs, I felt like, why are we still, you know, giving her morphine? She can't feel any pain. She's not trying to get out of bed. These are all things to think about now and try to make clear to the people around you what you hope to have and what you want. I want to share one more thing because I found this. Let's see if I can find it. I'm not sure that would be it. No. We're back to this. So can you see,
right now I just see like a list of things.
Do you see the list that I wrote?
Yeah, it's like DB and then Parallel World.
Okay, let me try again. Okay. How about now?
Hang on. It's just blank right now.
Do you see anything?
No, it's still just blank. I thought maybe it would take a second to come up, but it's still blank.
What?
A blank white page.
Okay, well, basically what I have is I have a table that Jeffrey Hopkins put together on these cycles, the ones that I was just describing to you, and I'm going to get them to Linda so she can share them somehow.
Okay.
I don't know if any of the DB reading has a really good table of the death solution stages, but I found a pretty good one, so I will get that so everybody has something pretty easy to do. So would you all like for me to lead you through that meditation that I was just reading? Would you like to go through that?
Yeah, I've done it before. I think it's pretty powerful.
Okay.
I would say yes.
Okay. And I, you know, I really do want to hear any questions you have, so don't be shy. Either ask me now or sending them to me privately later. I think, you know, for me, it was helpful to know a couple things from Geshe-la and also just rereading in this book. Like, you know, the poem talks a lot about frightful appearances because it is kind of like a dreamlike state, not just the death dissolution, but also in the bardo. And the point is to recognize, like, oh, yeah, that's just the that. Just like when I was a kid, you know, I'd go to the movies, I'd be freaked out of my mind because I only saw like one movie a year anyway. And whoever I was with would have to remind me, like, is this a movie? And I'm like, oh, all right, okay. Or if I went on a ride in New Orleans, there's Lake Pontchartrain, and I get sick on all the rides, so I'd only go to the what is it called? The haunted house, right? But I would get so scared out of my mind in the haunted house. I didn't know which was worse, like a roller coaster or the haunted house. It's like torture. But I would just close my eyes, you know, just like, okay, okay. But now it's like I use scary movies or anything like that to try to like just reduce my fear and know, okay, so that's just this. That's just this thing. It's just an illusion. It's just this. So that these things can arise during our mind in the death dissolution process in the same kind of way. It's just kind of like blips. Just like when you're meditating and this thought comes up and when you look at it, it tends to subside. That's what happens with me a lot. I have music running through my head all the time. When I wake up in the middle of the night, there's a song. When I meditate, there's a song. The only thing that helps it is I just look right at the song and then it starts to go down. If I say I'm not going to pay attention to the song, it gets really, really loud. And so similarly, in your meditation, your mind is going to do all kinds of things, just like when you're dying. And this is the time to practice with, like, what helps the mind subside? Usually shining a light and going, oh, here are thoughts arising. And then they kind of calm down. Oh, here's me thinking about that. And the mind is so tricky. You know, it's so tricky. So the other thing that Geshe-la said to me that helped me once when I was kind of freaking out about the bardo state, he was like, well, but you can practice there. You can practice bodhicitta there. You can ask for people to help you. You know, it's like a dream. So sometimes I'm aware that I'm dreaming, and I, especially if it's really scary, and I go, wait a minute, I think this is a dream. I don't have to do this. So if some of this is disturbing you, just remember that. That's a thing to practice with now. All right, so get into a comfortable position. And take a few nice deep breaths. And imagine your best place to die. Your bed, wherever it is that you would like to die, your body is comfortable, you're well taken care of. There's nothing to worry about on that score. Your body is now weak as the form aggregate is dissolving. Your structure, your bones can no longer support you. Your vision becomes dark and blurry. Your arms and legs feel like they're falling. You can no longer blink your eyes. Your natural glow is gone. And the inner sign is mirage. See, some kind of mirage. And you know you're in the first stages of dying. You tell yourself, mirage is here and smoke is coming. Now you can no longer feel the difference between pain, pleasure, and neutrality. You can no longer remember the difference between pain, pleasure, and neutrality. Your mouth and nose dry and pucker. You can no longer hear external sounds or internal sounds. The feeling aggregate has dissolved, and now you see wisps of smoke, and you know you're in the second disillusioned state. And you tell yourself, mirage has gone, smoke is here, and fireflies are coming. Now you can no longer remember the names of the people in your life. You can no longer remember your relationships to the people in your life. Warmth withdraws. A short inhale and very long exhale. And you can no longer smell. You know you're in the third dissolution state. And you see fireflies. And you tell yourself, smoke is gone, fireflies are here, and light is coming. Now you can no longer move your body. You can no longer remember the mundane details of this life. Who, what, why. You can no longer inhale. You can no longer move your body. You can no longer feel your body. You no longer have any conceptual thoughts. Your tongue is thick and dark, and you no longer taste. And you see a flickering light, like a flickering candlelight. Fireflies are gone. Flickering light is here. And sky-like appearance is coming. Now all gross forms of consciousness cease. And pure white sky-like appearance. There's no difference between your mind and the white sky-like appearance. Then it turns into a red sky-like appearance. And then a dark sky, and it feels like fainting when you fall into unconsciousness. And then pure blue, crystal clear sky appears, like the bluest sky on an autumn day. This is the nature of your mind. This is the clear light of mind, without clouds, pure, unending. Take a deep breath. Slowly come back. And what was that like for people? Were you able to feel that clear blue sky? I got a nice little glimpse of it. So you know, if you get a glimpse of that in any of your meditations, then it's meant to give us the confidence of going through those death dissolution states, entering into that with confidence. Well, one of the stanzas. Can't find it now, but one of the stanzas talks about kind of generating this kind of confidence in where we're going. All right. So what I would recommend is I'm going to send Linda the chart and also the what I've been sharing, those death dissolution states. And if you have the book, they're in there. And so I'd really recommend meditating on that this week, reading through it so it makes more sense. If you can memorize some of those keys that we were just hitting on, this is what happens in the first stage, this is what happens in the second stage, it's an excellent thing to do as you're falling asleep. So I try to, you know, meditate on it deeply at least once a week, but I try to do it every night as I'm falling asleep. That's something Geshe-la really recommends. So, and then bring any questions, any thoughts, any concerns, any experiences next week. We'll go into those last stages in a little bit more detail. We kind of rushed through a bunch of stuff, but there's a lot to cover. And we'll go back to some of the poem as well.
Julie is unmuted. Julie, did you have something you wanted to share or ask?
I think it was an accident.
Oh, okay. and for those of you who are new and might have questions about how to access the Discovering Buddhism materials on the Kadampa Center website, I am happy to stay after on Zoom and answer any questions and explain how to access that materials. And that's where the homework will be posted and the charts and things that Steve will be sending me, as well as a, you know, general information sheet about each module. So feel free to stay on if you're new and have questions.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions? Oh, Margaret?
I was just going to give her email again.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, let me type it in here. It's Steep Smith at gmail.com. Yeah, so, you know, if you have any questions about this, I feel for the new folks because it's, you know, it's not something you usually just jump right into on your first go-around. But, well, that's a good question, Rosemary. What part made you feel sad?
Mute myself. Going through the process, and I guess because I'm getting older and the reality of it is I could see it more than I probably could years ago. So the reality of probably really being able to see that sooner than later made me feel sad.
So think too. I mean, I think part of the homework is to think through some of what the sadness is. It's only natural, right, that saying goodbye is not easy. But there's a difference between feeling sad and being unprepared. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm glad people are commenting on this. A good starting point for new people. Wow. Well, there's just so much. But see, we're jumping into, this is like going to the Super Bowl. I will definitely stay on and talk with people a little bit longer too. For me personally, this is what motivated me to get involved with Buddhism. I wanted to understand more about death, and I wanted to make sure that I could have a peaceful mind no matter what kind of death I had. And I was young, but I had had a lot of really bad experiences. So I wanted to make sure that I could have as calm a death as possible because I knew it was going to happen. And that's the point. And I think, you know, everybody comes to Buddhism for a different reason at a different angle. The one thing we all have in common, you know, is we're breathing and we're also going to stop breathing at some day. And Buddhism is like standing up at the top of a building looking at the big picture view. And so we see that we're way more than this lifetime, that we are a stream of consciousness that is endless and beginningless. We can't find the source. And so what's very empowering, so this is actually what I said a lot in the very beginning of this module, is that everything in Buddhism is meant to empower you. If you're feeling confused or sad or scared, it's that we need to tinker with it a little bit so that you feel empowered. And the empowerment of this kind of meditation is that you have this moment to launch into, in mastering some of the stages of death and dying, we are given the tools to use it to propel ourselves. If you believe in the next life and that consciousness continues, then you're able to use these stages to propel you to the highest state possible. And also, in preparing for it, it will diminish our sad. So if we feel sad now, imagine how sad we'll feel when the time arises. And so we want to be able to work with our sadness now. and understand it and befriend it and be kind to ourselves, that compassion starts with ourselves. So the sadness that we feel, we must have compassion for ourselves. I know that Geshe has told me that a lot, that the mistake I make is not to include myself in all of that. So a good starting point for new people is compassion, self-compassion, compassion for others, knowing that we, you know, one of the meditations to do is that we're all in a prison. So the very first thing that Buddha taught is the nature of suffering, because sometimes we forget that we are in this place that's just full of suffering, because we might have a pretty good life, or, you know, we might just gotten something that we really want, and we want to ride that train for a while. That's fine. But we also know that where we're living is just full of all kinds of suffering, and that's also something we all have in common. The good news is there's things that brought that suffering into being, and there's things that can help us be free from that suffering. So starting with kind of understanding that, oh, yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, usually that's what brings people to Buddhism. And Giovanni, I'm going to get to you one second. but knowing usually that why we were attracted to this, it's usually because we had some problem that we wanted to get a better handle on. So, yeah. Giovanna?
Yes. So I felt scary, and not only sad, scary, when I have to forget the name of my children. So all this part, I felt very like in a prison in myself.
You felt a what?
Like in a prison, so in a jail.
This part.
It was very, very hard. Because you have to forget all your memory.
So
I have to forget the memory of my children.
Okay. So that forgetfulness is momentary. Because when you are enlightened, you'll remember all of it.
Yes, but I'm not enlightened tomorrow in years of a year.
Right, but also you're not going to forget the names of your children until that moment, right? And so let me just tell you a story that might help a little bit. So because at some point, whether, the death dissolution meditation makes us aware of that moment that we forget that name, right? That moment that we no longer are smelling or breathing or whatever. But we all are aware that we're going to die and no longer have those relationships, which is also sad. But from a Buddhist point of view, we're not getting out of that easily. that those connections also have no beginning or end. And so one time, this is a long time ago, when Geshe lived with me, he lived in my house for 9 years, and my dog, my beloved dog, was dying. And actually, after she had died, he said, I told him how sad I was, and this is just a dog, you know, but he said, make a strong wish that she's in your very first circle of disciples when you achieve Buddhahood. And this was such a sweet thing, but I also knew that it's not just that far away time of when I reach Buddhahood, but also, my very next life or my very next moment, that there's really no beginning or end to those connections either. That you can't find a beginning to the connections you've had with your children, and there won't be an end to them either. Yes, there will be a moment in these lives that we're living now where there's going to be a separation, you know, that everything that comes together goes apart. And so now we're meditating on this part where things go apart. So then one of the things I'm going to ask Geshe, because I think, Giovanna, you were here when I told this story about I was very sad because I was, you know, Katrina had ruined New Orleans. My mother came to live with me. Now I was in Washington helping my uncle who was dying. And I just was overwhelmed with impermanence. Everywhere I looked was impermanence. Do you remember this story? Yeah. And so then I asked Geshe, like, what do I do? You know, I'm just overwhelmed with this sadness of impermanence. He said, oh, that's because you're only meditating on one end of what goes away. You have to start meditating now on what arises. And things only arise because other things dissolve. And so that helped me a great deal because I was having to say goodbye to people I loved and whole ways of my life, you know. And I think it's a mistake to skip over the sadness. You know, we need to use it. We can't deny it. So it helped me balance it. Like there is sadness in seeing my city ruined, seeing my family members deteriorating. And then I tried to balance it with meditating on where they might be going. You know, where was my mother's consciousness going? Where was my uncle's consciousness going? You know, what could I do to help them? And so what now can you do to help the future of you and your children in this life, but also in future lives? So Buddhism really is about the long, long haul. I'm going to try to find a talk that Robert Thurman gave. Robert Thurman came to Raleigh and did this wonderful talk. And he said, you know, it's all about the long view. And he said in Buddhism, he said something like, just imagine, you know, like in New York, he lives in New York, you're stuck in a subway train. It's hot, it's smelly, there's all these people. Because it's kind of like that. We aren't getting out of this dead, he said. The expression, you're not going to get out of this alive. He goes, in Buddhism, it's more like you're not going to get out of this dead. Just dying doesn't get you off the hook, doesn't get you away from these people that you're stuck in this subway car with. You're not getting away from them. And so how can you have the best possible connections with them so that you're moving through this life and through the death state and to the next state brings you and yourself, you and your family, your friends, and strangers to a higher level. It's like we're spiraling around something, and you are the keeper right now of this river of consciousness, so you are able to spiral around at a higher state, and that will affect all of the people in your life, living and dead. And another monk had told me, it's kind of like this, he said, you know, I was asking him something about how I could really help other family members of mine indirectly through my practice. And he said, it's kind of like this, you know, somebody in your family tells you they got robbed. You didn't get robbed. There's nothing you can do, but it still affects you all. It still affects you, this news. So imagine if it's good news. Imagine if you're, you know, your energy is evolving and moving up and becoming higher and higher and higher each go around. That's your connection to these people is not going away. But it is in this life, it's limited because these forms that we are in can only sustain us for so long. But the connection doesn't end. Does that help at all?
Yes, thank you.
But
good idea.
Yeah. And I think we need to find a way to meditate on those parts that feel either just kind of neutral or okay. Because at that moment, they won't feel frightening if we're doing this correctly. It'll feel more like maybe like emerging, like, you know, kind of like we're no longer in this container, we're everywhere. So the difference between your children and somebody else's children all become just like this one big bath of love rather than a contracted feeling of, but that also depends on how we practice now. But, you know, I mean, love is the most powerful thing. So the love that you have, so actually, you know, when you're on your way towards dying, and Geshe-la and I had a friend who was slowly dying, and he would tell me to remind her all the time that what she needed to be meditating on now, she got closer to death and was in the stages of dying, was all the positive that she had done. You know, she had adopted a young child who was six and raised him and done an amazing job, and now he had two children. Like, to meditate on that, all that she had given, all from her bottom of her heart, you know, that's what actually maybe is a really good homework to do now. So especially for those of you to meditate this week on all the most incredible things that you have done in your life. Because when we get closer to death, that's what we want to meditate on. That's exactly what we want to meditate on. This is the death dissolution state, so we're in the actual stages of dying. But what we want to meditate on as we get approach those is all the positive things we've done in our life, because it's like a wave that we can ride in its draft. And your connections to those loved ones is exactly what you want to be meditating on, all the good that you've done. You don't, you know, that's it. So let's do that this week, okay, Giovanna? And Rosemary, does that get you some
thing? Can I share a little thing?
Yeah.
So I didn't like going into the body so much, uh-huh, because we felt like if we focus on the prayer or a chant, then normally when we sleep, we're not even focused on the body. So I felt like even when I'm dying, I don't think I want to focus on the body than doing a chant or thinking of Buddha or God. My old friend, she was going through these Alzheimer's states while living. She wouldn't remember my name or people's things. So I felt like already people are going through the dementia. And I went and prayed with her with the Buddha medicine. And then after, she was listening to Medicine Buddha bhajan and she died in it. So I felt like, I know in yoga we do a lot of this yoga nidra.
Mm-hmm.
You're going through each part of the body. The once you go in, you're not even there in the body anymore. So you're into deep.
Right. So there's lots of, you know, when somebody's dying, there's lots of mantras to play for them so they can have those imprints on their mind. 100%. This meditation is so that you are familiar with those stages, so that you know what's happening and that you can use them, so that you don't miss that opportunity when the clear light of mind arises. That's actually what we're talking about, is you don't want to miss that. You don't want to get sidetracked. Because your body is dissolving, you won't be necessarily, you'll feel some of what we're talking about. But your mind, like I said before, your mind is going to be tripping off of some of these, just like you would if you were in a cold room when you were sleeping. So you want to be as aware as possible of what's happening, primarily for the reason that you don't get frightened by it and that you don't miss the chance to use the clear light of mind. Because that's the time when you will feel, like I get glimpses of it, where it's just this overpowering feeling of love and joy and peace and connection, you know? You feel connected to everything. So you don't want to miss that chance, and that's what all of this is really about. But yes, absolutely, Naga, you know, playing mantras, focusing the mind on things that you can. These other states will be happening. You won't have to worry about it. These states will be happening, you know, and then you won't be as frightened by them. And certainly for some people, like who have Alzheimer's, some of these are appearing earlier. You know, that was happening with my father. He died during the pandemic, but I was on Skype with him and his wife. They lived in England, and I could tell the day he was definitely going to the active stages of dying, because she thought it was normal that he couldn't blink. And I was like, that's not normal. So, but he had already was forgetting names, all of these things, you know, all of that was already happening. So it can happen in kind of different sequence and different order. He was already thin and weak, you know, all of this stuff. But these are things that if we meditate on now should reduce the fear, should reduce the sadness and increase our love and our connection and our ability to align with the highest possible true nature of our mind. So please email me if you have some blowback from this meditation or are still feeling sad afterwards. okay? Because what I actually, especially for those of you who felt that, what I actually want you to do this week, instead of meditating on the death dissolution, I want you to meditate on the positive things and connections that you have created in this life, because that is what you're going to be meditating on before the death dissolution states. Because you want to accumulate all the positive that you've done and soak yourself in it before you enter into those states, because it will have a really powerful effect. I've watched Geshe-la do this with people who are in all kinds of different stages of dying, helping them understand, you know, the positive they've done, their good karma. That's what we need to focus on. So even if it's intellectual at first, you know, making a list and then meditating on it, meditating on those connections, what you've done, that's what I want everybody to do, but especially people who felt some sadness. And then next week, we're going to get in small groups. That's what we're going to start with. So for the new people, usually we're in small groups, small Zoom rooms, but there was so much to cover today, we didn't. But next week, we'll start that way. So please bring your lists of joy and connection. Okay? All right. Thank you, everybody. And we're going to dedicate all the merit that we have. So this is another Buddhist practice, is everything that we do with our body, speech, and mind creates seeds, creates karma, creates causes. And so you have just spent an enormous amount of time on a Monday night thinking about a very difficult topic, challenging yourself, meditating, listening to others. So think of all of that you've created by doing this. It's like a handful of gold, and now you get to decide where you're planting that. You're dedicating your merit, and I would suggest you dedicate it to the highest possible result, which is your liberation from this prison of cyclic existence, so that you can show others exactly the way out. And now Linda is going to show us Shantideva's prayer, which we can use to increase our dedication.
You want me to say it, Steve, or you want to?
Yeah, you please.
Okay. May all beings everywhere, plagued by suffering of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merit. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drink. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvest. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may these never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be free. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world.
Thank you.